Are you curious about, interested in, or working within the field of anesthesiology, and you are a woman, person of color, or otherwise do not fit the stereotypical image of what an anesthesiologist looks like, then this is the podcast for you. We will discuss what life is like on the other side of the blue drape for us. Issues most relevant, such as what is anesthesia really? And we're not talking textbook definition. Tips for applying, success in residency, life as an attending, and beyond. Join us each week as we take a dive into this rich and often misunderstood field. This is your host, Dr. Alicia Peterson, and welcome to SIVO Sisters.
Oh, I am so excited. I have with me Dr. Candace Williams. She is an anesthesiology pain medicine physician, and she has a very unique path in how she chooses to deliver pain care by using her musical talents and gifts. So for all of you out there who are just like, man, you know, you have to choose between medicine and the rest of your life. You know, I think Dr. Williams is an excellent example on how you really don't have to choose. It takes some intentionality, but you really can do it all and have a life that you want to live. Okay, and not one that's forced upon you by corporate medicine. So Dr. Williams, please, you know, you can add to the introduction, but we're so interested in hearing about how you became this musical, this pain medicine, like all of it. So yeah, brief introduction, but we want to hear how'd you get interested and how'd you even hear about anesthesiology?
Thank you for having me. Yeah, so anesthesiology is one of those specialties that, you know, you have to find or it finds you, right? Because it's not covered in the third year medical school lexicon of rotations, right? So the short answer is the way I found anesthesiology was kind of on a fluke. I was doing a rotation at the National Institutes of Health in research between my third and fourth year, and I hadn't decided on my specialty. And my research was multidisciplinary. So it was in the NHLBI, which is National Heart, Lung, and Blood, and had to do with sickle cell disease. But I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, thinking heavily about internal medicine, but also considering other things. And one of my friends, one of my BFFs, I don't want to call her out, but I probably will. Okay, Dr. Goldie Wing at UCLA. Okay, I called you out. We talked one day, and she was choosing between urology and anesthesiology. And she was like, have you ever thought about this? Because you really love the heart and you like physiology and you're good with your hands and you should think about it. So I reached out to someone at NIH, the head of anesthesiology there, because I was at the clinical center. So they have surgeries there. And I shadowed this person. I went to meet with her, and then I shadowed some anesthesiologists in the department. And what's interesting is this person was at the time an oral board examiner, which of course I had no idea what that was, but I knew she scared the living daylights out of me. She was super serious. And I was like, okay, what am I getting myself into? So that was the start. And so after I shadowed, I decided to call up, you know, contact the head of the acute care college at the time, and some of the rotation leaders of anesthesia, because in my third year, I got literally 3 weeks of it. It got cut off by Thanksgiving. So I contacted them by email, and then they called and they were like, sure, when you come back to school, sure, you know, do an audition rotation with us early and see if it's a fit. And the rest is history from there.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I love that quote. You know, either you seek out anesthesia or anesthesia finds you, and it looks like it found you through that suggestion from your friend. Just so we can have some context, between your third and fourth year, you went to NIH. Where did you go to undergrad, med school?
Yeah. So undergrad, so I'm from Los Angeles, California, originally. So born in, I call it South Central. They call it South LA. South Central, as those who are natives know it. And I ended up going to UC Berkeley for undergrad, which was a great experience. It was awesome. Still was very much on the fence. So this part of my story, very much on the fence between music and pre-med at that time, that I decided the pre-med track. And then I ended up going to UCLA for medical school and then matching UCLA anesthesiology. And those match season. So Congrats to those who matched strength, to those who didn't, who scrambled, you know. Yeah, that's a whole segue. I hope the system gets a little better there. But, and then I worked. So I worked and then returned for a pain fellowship, which is like very painful. I don't want to say don't recommend, but that was hard.
Yeah,
that was hard to do.
Completing residency and then working, getting a taste of some real money, only to go back to indentured servitude again.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you really had to have had a passion for it to want to get the additional training.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. So that's the context. The research came from just wanting to know, answer the question for myself. How much did I want research to play a role in my career? And at the time, you know, I didn't know my specialty, right? So I just was like, do I like this? Do I like bench work? Do I like translational research? And NIH helped me answer that. I mean, the answer was like kind of a no, negatory, not for me, no thanks. But I got a first author publication out of it. I got some few other publications, and more than that, just good mentorship and colleagues who I still talk to and still reach out to. So it was a really rich experience. So it's not just always just because you're going to go on that track and stay on it. Sometimes you learn things about yourself. And it's like, wow, you know, once I picked anesthesiology, I was like, I don't really know if I'm going to go the research route. And so I still dabble in that. Like I have interest, but I realized that being a researcher, you know, in that sense, was not in my future, but
and that takes
it was
so
still worth
much,
it.
Absolutely, and that takes so much courage, I think, to actually declare, because in academics, you get research shoved down your throat, you know, like all your attendings, like, oh, they have a side research project, you know, the institution obviously like holds up the attendings that have research grants. So whether or not you think you're interested, it sort of is forced upon you, and you have to make the conscious effort to be like, no, that's not really my path or for me. So after NIH, I mean, it really looked like it was instrumental in introducing you to anesthesia. So now when you go back fourth year, how have things changed? What do you do differently?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I had a loss. My father passed away like right when I was studying for step one, and it was a sudden loss. Mm. And so then I took that year off to do, I was really grieving very hard. So I took that year and I needed it. I needed space and time and all those things. And so by the time I came back to school, I really was determined to figure out, okay, how am I going to weed these things out? Because unlike a lot of my colleagues who would say like, I love everything, I just want, I think I'm the opposite. Like I didn't like most things. Let's be honest. I couldn't say that, of course. And yeah, I guess some specialties picked up on that as they, you know, wanted to put in my dean's letter, but that's here or there. I just couldn't fake and feign that stuff, you know? And so it's strange. It's like some of the specialties that you would think, you know, I wouldn't be as drawn towards, like surgery. I loved it. I had a great surgical rotation. I just realized that I didn't like surgical problems, right? Like reading about the bowel, I would fall asleep. So I took some of those clues and that learning from actually asking. I was very pointed in asking different professors that I had rapport with to sit down and talk to them. And I think a lot of times students don't do that. I was really trying to figure out, what is my path? What am I doing? So I picked out a trauma surgeon, and they literally had to leave in the middle of our talk. There's a woman trauma surgeon, and they were like, I gotta go by. I was like, okay, cross that off. You know, not like vascular. And the person was like, well, do you like general surgery? Because I have the path to vascular. And I was like, no. And they were like, no, you probably should cross that off. So I went through the different things that I had interest, including anesthesia. So I tried to stagger my rotations that way, where internal medicine was early, and I did it at a place that, well, you know, all these places have, what are they called? Reputations, right? Like at your school, certain sites are harder to do a rotation at the other. And so I kind of knew doing it at this place was might be a little harsh, and I didn't want it to show up. So, you know, in certain letters and stuff. So I did it early. You have to be strategic. So I did internal medicine early, and that was good because they did not like me. And I was like, what did I do wrong? They just, it just seemed like I could not impress them.
So I would just want to put a pin in that. And so for all you all in med school, again, you mentioned being strategic. Dr. Williams' tip is for those sites that you know are the most difficult, get them out the way early. And the reviews that you get from those rotations that are early in the year, you can argue that you were a fresh third year, right? And so it does sort of meter out, however unflattering those reviews might be, just by being able to say, hey, you're first and new at this. And then,
right, even audition rotations too, right? If you do the first ones in the fourth year, they kind of, some of those comments made it in, but some did not, because all the comments don't make it in. So I don't know if it was early or late. Look, my memory, it's been a while. I realized, like, oh my gosh, I'm getting old. And so I staggered it with anesthesia, basically, is the bottom line. So internal medicine, anesthesia. I think one of them was late on purpose. But anyhow, one person told me, and he was an ophthalmologist, and he would say, I don't remember his name, but he said that when you find your specialty, the sun shines on your face and the wind pushes at your back. I don't know if you've heard that saying, but I was like, wow, is it really that serious? But it was, in a way, because when I did my rotation in anesthesia, it's not so much that I was like, this is what I should do, but they allowed me to do a lot more. Like, I got paired with the resident who, I mean, she really must have believed in me, because, okay, one time, I'm telling myself, so one time I would put in arterial lines and stuff like that, and she would let me do certain things. And I, like, unhooked the arterial line because, the tubing, you don't realize the stripping and the whatever. So I unhooked it, and it was like blood shooting everywhere. And she was cussing, and we were like, oh, we're trying to get it all hooked back up. And, you know, as a student, you're scared to death, right? But I knew that everything was cool because we looked at each other and we, like, laughed so hard. We laughed the entire time, the rest of the case. I was like, I'm not going to touch anything. That was like the running joke for the time we were paired together. And she was a really big advocate for me to match. I was really like, so much so that I went in maybe about 5 to 7 years ago. I did go, like, see her. You know what I'm saying? Like, you still keep in contact with those people who champion you. So she championed me in a way that, you know, you can't ever repay that. She didn't have to do that. And internal medicine, like I said, they weren't feeling me. I had done research and all this stuff, and we had a sickle cell patient. So I told them, yeah, I did research with this group. They pulled a paper, and I told them I did research with that group, and they thought I was lying. Then I had to show them the PI's number on my phone. Mm. I was like, I don't think this is lying. So I knew I was going to get a bad thing on this rotation, because there's a lot of bias, you know, people. Yeah, there's a lot of bias in medicine, unfortunately. And so they were like, oh, who are you? No, there's no way you did research with these people. And I'm like, well, I have 3 papers coming out. So anyway, it's where the chips fell. Like, I just felt acceptance in that field. And also, I liked it. You know, of course, there's that element of it. I liked it and everything. But yeah, you kind of find your people, you know?
Definitely. It sounds like then, when you said that you straddled internal medicine and anesthesia, that you were still considering internal medicine before. Wow.
After that first rotation where they were doubting if I was, you know, doing stuff, I was like, well, I got to cross this off my list because.
Okay. Yeah, that's not.
Yeah, apparently I don't fit. Apparently I'm not a good fit for this. So I just didn't want to climb those kinds of mountains.
No, absolutely. And then you ended up pursuing anesthesiology residency, and it sounds like you matched. Mm-hmm. So where did you end up going?
I went to UCLA. So that was my first choice. I was really, Beth Israel Deaconess was my number two, and I really was going to switch it. And then as far away is Boston. I had no ties there, but I knew the program was good, and I really liked the program director. Also, University of Chicago, the program director at the time. I was like, oh man, these are cold places. And I had a fiance, but long-term relationship. I know that they wouldn't want to go there. So I couldn't change it. At the last minute, I was like, no, I'm going to put it back. So I was glad that I matched my first choice, but that was not, I'll say it this way without revealing too many of my company secrets, that was not without struggle. You know, my dean's letter was not perfect. You know, it had things in it that could have been potentially damaging. But I know this, that like the hand of the Lord, you know, for me is Jesus Christ and his touching of my life and guiding things. I know that that happened in spite of the roadblocks and the different things that were said in the different rotations. Because I had OB-GYN, they ripped me a new one, but it was right after surgery. And surgery was my first rotation in the third year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, how am I this terrible? How am I great on surgery and then terrible OB-GYN? Like, you guys, come on, right? So I just feel that I was, you know, led to stay there and meant to stay there. So.
Mm-hmm. And that was your institution that you went to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that resident who really advocated for you, I mean, mm-hmm. That's all really good. And how did residency go?
You know, residency is hard, period. I feel like across the board, it was a struggle for me. I won't lie. I've learned since, you know, practicing that, realize that I'm an empath, you know, and so it was hard to see all of the things and emergency all the time. Like everything is always ever important and is vigilant and is just high stress. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it was very much like that for me. And then on top of that, you know, you had your, like, my colleagues were very supportive, but then you have the subset of your attendings who aren't, or who are detractors. You're not this, you're not that, you're not this, that. And it really put some doubts in my mind, like, man, can I really do this? But then I had to look at it like I was pregnant about 3 times during that residency, or probably 2.5 times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I look back on it, I had to at the end kind of stand up for myself a little bit and say, listen, you know, you're pulling me in here over this subset of evaluations late and trying to say that I'm not this and I'm not that. And I'm like, have I ever had a drug error? No. Have I ever had a complication? Like, really? I had maybe 1 or 2, you know, but anything serious on the table, mm-hmm. anything like that, that's beyond the pale of what other trainees have had. They had to admit, no. And I'm like, I haven't had any misconduct. You had to kind of go down the line and say, listen, you know, I really haven't had as much trouble. You guys are trying to pay here. And so I'm going to need you to just leave me be.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is what I had to say is like, you're going to just leave me alone, because they were doing the whole, it gets into the savior complex thing. And then there's not a lot of Black people there. I just felt like they just didn't know how to deal with it. Yeah. I don't know. It's that whole, like, oh, how can we help you? And I'm like, you can leave me alone.
Right. And you know what? Oh my gosh, the literature backs your experience so well in regards to how these programs can over police Black and Brown trainees, to the point where it's like, you're trying to make it seem like there's a problem when there's no problem. And one thing that you did so well that I hope that our listeners will do is you knew you. You knew that you didn't have the drug errors. You didn't have patient complications, more so than any of the other trainees on your level. You knew how you performed on the ITE. You knew that you arrived on time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you were able to present all this objective data as evidence to them. And all they had was, well, we have our feelings. And it's like, no, what you have is your biases. And you have to check them, right? Because I'm just glad that you were able to kind of put them in hand length and say, just let me get my training and my education.
Yeah, it was tough, you know, to speak up for myself, because while you're in the system, they can hurt you. You know, I don't know if you heard that saying either, but that's one of my, you know, you're in the system, they can hurt you. So you have to be careful, right? Until you're done and boarded and blah, 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 and on your way. And so I was very cognizant of how I said things, but I had to say, like, hey, listen, just, and then I had to pay back all, you know, okay, so when you have kids, and you want to take off maternity leave, then you take all of your vacation first, and then you have to tack on any time that you take off, you tack it on to the end. So I think I graduated in August or something like that. And that was like super painful because I was super senior. So, you know, that means attendees could sleep at night because I was pretty much it. Right. And I was pregnant at the time, so it was rough, right? And so you're going through all these things, and I would just never forget, like, the morning I went up to see a red line. And as people don't know, that's when you come down with an emergency case from the floor. That's what they call it, UCLA, it's a red line. So I went up, saw the patient, prepped it, did stuff, was still on paper then, you know, did the pre-op, form and everything, brought it downstairs, and I was planning to hand it to team captain, which is usually, you know, a senior resident, but it happened to be one of the attendings. I'll say it that way because, you know, anesthesia is small, so people can figure this stuff out. They know UCLA, but it was one of the attendings. And I just cannot explain the level of joy. Like, I like literally handed him the pager and put my hands up. I was like, ah! I was like yelling. I didn't run because I was pregnant. I like tried it back and forth. And then one of my old chief residents was there because she was still, you know, she was an attending, and she like hugged me and we cried because she knew some of the stuff. I went through some things while I was there. So yeah, it was great. Yeah.
That was your last day?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so awesome. Okay. We know you kind of alluded to that you went into the workforce after your residency. Mm-hmm. And then something happened and you decided to get pain training. You know, walk us through what that was.
As you know, at Sivo Sisters, we demystify and diversify the field of anesthesiology, all within the duration of a what? Anesthesia break. We're coming up on time. Break is probably over. Join us next week as we continue this thrilling conversation. Ta-ta! I hope you enjoyed this episode of Sivo Sisters. If you love this episode as much as I did, head on over and rate and subscribe so you don't miss out. New episodes drop every week on a Monday because we all can use a little something to get us through the week. Am I right? I'd love to hear more from you on the topics that you want to hear. So let me know in the comments. This is Dr. Peterson signing off. See you next time.